come up on Taiwan.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
Where today we'll have poet Janaka Stuckey talking about his latest book, The Truth Is We Are Perfect, out with Third Man Press.
And it's an interesting collection of poems. It's a beautiful collection of poems. It's very lyrical, very musical.
And dare I say contemplative.
That too, yes.
It's contemplative, you know.
But the thing that really strikes me that I kind of want to share with the listener right now is when I talked to him and I wasn't sure how to pronounce his name, he says, Janaka Stuckey. Just think of Hanukkah cookie.
That was great, yeah. And I did, actually, as we were talking, I thought of Hanukkah cookie.
Yeah, and not only that, but now I just want to say his name over and over again. Janaka Stuckey, Janaka Stuckey. It's a fun name to say. You know, and I think, Tim, you know, I respect you and I admire you.
Thank you.
Your fun. Your name isn't necessarily fun to say.
It's not at all.
Tim
no.
Z. Adnandas. No. It's powerful.
Tim,
but
well, you know, Tim, it's a fun. Short name. So.
Some people have fun names.
Well, that's the thing about having a good name when you're a poet or an author, right? I mean, it's a memorable name, especially when you got something tied to it like Hanukkah cookie.
Hanukkah cookie.
Now we know it. Janaka Stuckey. Yep.
You know what? We should come up with rhymes for our names. You know, like Daniel Chacon sounds like.
I won't tell you. I have things that come to mind.
Hey.
But I think it takes me back to third grade playgrounds. So I probably shouldn't.
And, you know, being a writer, as you know, the name recognition is just as important as it is for a politician.
Right.
Because, you know, people can hear your name and they say, oh, I've heard that name before.
Right.
And even if they have no idea what you have written,
right.
You know, they've never read you.
They've heard the name.
Yeah. And they say, oh, yeah, he's a writer.
That's
he's
right.
famous.
That's right. We should all be so lucky. Apparently, I am not so lucky. You know, Tim.
Oh, get out of here. Get
no,
out of
no, no, no.
here. Everybody
no, my,
knows Tim Z. Hernandez.
No, they don't. Here's the thing. That my parents were not thinking. They were trying to get me the most American name possible because they grew up in South Texas.
Tim is an American.
They thought Tim because Lassie was on at the time. Timmy. So they're like, let's go with Timmy. Tim.
Yeah.
And so that's Tim Hernandez. That's what I got.
That is a very that's a good point. That is a very right. American name.
Yeah.
My parents, they named me Daniel Chacon.
Mm-hmm.
I have no middle name. And when I was a young man, I asked, Mom, how come I didn't get a middle name? She goes, well, you're like the third kid, and by the time we got to you, we were just tired of naming babies. She really said that.
Really?
Yes.
Tired of naming babies?
Tired of naming babies. So they just, you know, picked a name. Janaka Stuckey is going to talk about his fantastic new book, The Truth Is We Are Perfect. So stick around. Janaka Stuckey is the author of The Truth Is We Are Perfect, which is a collection of poems we're going to talk about today. He is also publisher of Black Ocean Press, as well as the annual poetry journal Handsome. He is author of two chapbooks, Your Name Is the Only Freedom and The World Will Deny It For You. His poems have appeared in such journals as Denver Quarterly, Fence, and North American Review. He is a two-time national haiku champion, and in 2010, he was voted Boston's best poet in the Boston Phoenix. Janaka, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Congratulations on this new book, The Truth Is We Are Perfect, which is put out by Third Man Press.
Wonderful title, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And this is the first book of a single poet that Third Man Press has come out with. Can you tell us how that happened?
Yeah, sure. So Third Man, which is a publishing arm of Third Man Records, which is Jack White's record label based in Nashville.
Mm.
And they sort of dipped their toes in the publishing pool last year with this beautiful box set anthology called Language Lessons, Volume 1. I think they're going to do a Volume 2 at some point. But it's this big box set with an oversized textbook size anthology of poetry and prose. And it also comes with a double vinyl LP and some broadsides and everything.
Great.
So that was their sort of foray into it and how they got into doing Third Man books. The story of my involvement with them goes back actually quite a few years that Chet Wisey, who is the editor for Third Man Books. He's also a rock and roll musician. Hmm. And I met him, I would say it's got to be at least 15 years ago now, maybe longer, because I was a big fan of his band. And I met him when his band came through Boston and did a couple shows here. And years after that, at this point probably about 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, I was I had lost some of his band's albums, and I emailed him to try to see if he, the band had since broken up, and I emailed him to see if I could get some copies of their albums. And I emailed him from my Black Ocean address, and so he sort of went back to the Black Ocean website, saw that I was involved in poetry, which he was interested in going back to school for his MFA. Hmm. So so we kind of struck up a conversation over music and poetry and sort of developed a relationship that way. Fast forward a number of years, he becomes the editor at Third Man Books, and I'm invited to be in their language lessons anthology.
Wow.
that came out last year. And I had been, since the publication of that anthology, I had sort of been doing some friendly consulting about how to get into the publishing business and navigating distribution and all these things that they really didn't have any familiarity with being a record label.
Right.
And last summer, I had just finished writing this book, and I was sending it out to a couple of different editors and doing some queries and stuff. And literally, I'm sitting at my desk doing this, and an email comes in from Chet with a question about language lessons, and this light bulb went off, and I thought, hey, you know who might be interested in my book? Third Man.
Nice.
So I fired that back to him, and he said, yeah, we'd love to look at it. We're fans of your work. Send over the manuscript. We're meeting with Jack in a couple weeks to talk about the future of our catalog.
Wow.
And then, and one thing led to another, and I mean, I just feel so lucky that within 6 weeks of finished writing this book, it was acquired by Third Man.
Wow, for a collection of poems, that is amazing.
Yeah. Not only that, so they acquired it in August of last year. So 6 weeks after I finished writing it, it was acquired. And then, you know, like 9 months later, it's in print.
Jeez.
Right, that's fast turnaround. Crazy.
Yeah. And as soon as they told me that, I said, oh, you know, they acquired it. And I said, oh, that's great. When do you want to publish it? They said, April. I said, whoa. All right, I'm going to hand you a production schedule for my book right now. You guys don't understand. Like, you're really fast-tracking this.
Well, it's a beautiful book, and the poems are fantastic, and they're really kind of musical. And I'm wondering if that's
right.
Maybe one of the attractions that Third Man Books had with it, because it really is, you know, a lot of repetition, a lot of rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, how much are you influenced by music as you're writing the poems?
A lot, actually, I would say. I'm probably influenced by music just as much, if not more, if I am influenced by other poetry.
Mm.
And not just music, but other mediums altogether. But, yeah, you know, I think one of the great synergies about working with Third Man and maybe why they were attracted to my work is that we have this appreciation for poetry, not just on the page, but as an out loud art,
right.
You know.
Mm,
and
right.
when I'm composing the poems, actually not while I'm composing them, but when I'm revising them afterwards, I'm often reading them out loud to myself,
right.
And reciting them over and over again. And you'll notice that there's a decent amount of white space on
yeah.
the page too in
right.
the poems, and to me those are signals. Those are, you know, like, I telegraph how big of a pause I want out loud with white space.
Right.
And, you know, so I try to write the breath and the silence directly onto the page. And so, you know, and that comes from a long history, personal history of poetry as an out loud art. In my college years, I started this group called the Guerrilla Poets, which was like a street poetry collective. And we used to just read poetry in public spaces for free, unannounced and unexpected. And,
nice.
Yeah. Like guerrilla warriors, right?
Exactly.
You just show up.
Yeah.
You know, that it's interesting, that intersection between music and poetry. You know, I know that in the introduction, which I enjoyed reading by Chet Wisey, who is
yeah.
the publisher of Third Man, he refers to the book segment as another genre of music. And then, you know, we're talking about music here, but in a very general sense. But he actually mentions that you being at a punk rock show, which then he talks about folks like Richard Hell. One of my own teachers was actually Steven Taylor, who wrote False Prophets about Richard Hell and the Fugs. And he talks about that intersection between Ed Sanders and, you know, how punk rock and poetry were sort of born from the same seed. And so I was interested kind of, I guess, in a more specific way asking, does punk rock music have influence over your work?
Yeah, I would say, you know, there's a lot of different genres that do. Punk is definitely one of them. I grew up as a punk in my adolescent years. And not just the music, but the politics. I was a Black Bloc anarchist for a while. I did a lot of direct action and stuff. And my art and my politics and my spirituality are all tied together. And sort of this idea of elevated consciousness and how that ripples out through your actions and how you operate in the world. But, you know, actually, it's funny you ask about punk. I used to have this sort of jokey theory that I postulated in college. One of my mentors in college was Bill Knott. And speaking of Richard Hell is a big fan of Bill Knott and talked about going to see Bill Knott back in the like late 60s and early 70s. Bill was living in New York for a while, and Bill was always sort of known for being he would have these sort of shabby clothes, you know, I think pretty typical of poets of that era. But he actually was known for, he had the sweater that had like safety pins holding the holes shut. If you trace the history of the aesthetic, the visual aesthetic of punk, the Sex Pistols were influenced by the look of Richard Hell, who was performing, you know, sort of early proto-punk back in the early and mid-70s also, and GBGBs and stuff. And so I postulated that Richard Hell cribbed his look from Bill Knott. And in that way, Bill Knott, this like great poet that emerged in the late 60s, was like the godfather of punk rock.
Absolutely.
So that, you know.
We teach in an MFA program here at the University of Texas, El Paso. And recently one of my students wrote a poem called Punk Rock Quans. And, and on one of them, the first line was, Hell Takes the Stage.
That was great. Hell Takes the Stage.
But continuing on this music thing, we're talking to Janaka Stuckey, author of the new collection of poems, The Truth Is We Are Perfect. Large Hearted Boy, which is a website, asked you to create a playlist that would go with your with your book, kind of like a soundtrack. And I looked over the playlist and played a few of them, but I have to admit, I heard a very few of these bands, except for White Stripes. I, of course, know who they are. But how did you choose these songs? Were you aware of them as you were writing the poems, or did you just kind of think of the book and then choose them?
Yeah, no, a lot of the stuff on the Large Hearted Boy playlist is music I listened to while I was writing the book. And I should sort of like take a step back here and talk about my creative process, which involves listening to music. So I write when I sit down to write, I write from a kind of trance state, which I enter through an intentional ritual that I've created for myself. And in that sense, the creative act for me is kind of a waking meditation. And the goal there is to become empty. So it's not to write something in particular. I don't sit down and say, I'm going to write a poem, you know, about this person, or I'm going to write a poem about the sky or whatever. I'm not writing about something in particular. I'm trying to become empty when I write. And so whatever exists on the page at the end of that meditation is the poem. But part of that intentional ritual I create for myself involves listening to some kind of fairly ambient music. And I do that because it helps me sort of disconnect and start free associating. So a lot of the music that is in that Large Hearted Boy playlist isn't punk rock, but a lot of it, you know, would be classified as doom metal, which is these slow, almost like mono chords that get drawn out over long periods of time, or very spare piano concertos, or, you know, somewhat experimental music that does a lot of looping and layering. And that's the type of music that really helps me get into that delta wave, free associative brain space.
Janneke, you mentioned the idea of sort of, you know, emptying yourself out before you begin the creative process. And, you know, before I knew anything about you, as I was reading the book, it kind of reminded me, just sort of instantly reminded me of like Timely Rain, which is, you know, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche's book, mm-hmm. Poetry, even some of the poems by Thich Nhat Hanh and Hafiz. And I sensed this real strong kind of spiritual sensibility in your work, which actually is funny because it contrasts the punk – kind of you would think it contrasts yeah. the punk rock sort of aspect, right? But, you know, and then you, obviously you have use words and images, words like resurrection and atom of light, and in your last section there, recreating a miraculous object, you use repetition yep. and chants like Om Kring Kali Om. So then I started to go back into your look at your bio and stuff, and I realized that you'd spent time in an ashram when you were younger. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering then, you know, can you talk a little bit more about how that has specifically influenced your writing?
Sure. You know, especially as I read through responses to my work, whether it's mm-hmm. the previous chapbooks that have been published or
right.
Some of the early reviews that have already come out with this book, people refer to it as often as like ecstatic poetry or use the word mystic.
Right.
And I have done a lot of thinking about it, and I suppose in a sense I am a mystic, but it's also important to note that I'm a skeptic. So my spiritual approach to life and to poetry is one based on experiential knowledge.
Right.
So in that sense, my life experiences directly affect the formation of my beliefs and my artwork. As you mentioned, my parents exposed me to many traditions growing up mm-hmm. and a lot of the holy individuals in those traditions, and that includes Hinduism, but also Buddhism, right. Judaism, Christianity, Islam, right. and some other more esoteric ones, questionably called. So but so when I was growing up, we visited sites and teachers all across the country and even sometimes in other countries. And that's how we spent our weekends and family vacations. So I pulled a little from each of them, and I also pulled knowledge from other experiences, which I sought out on my own. I worked in the funeral business for almost 7 years. When I got old enough, I backpacked around India by myself. Mm. I journeyed into the Sahara. Right. Like a lot of people, I experimented with psychedelics and fasting and other stuff like that.
Right.
And through all those experiences, you could say I've developed a highly personalized relationship to energy and matter and mm-hmm. spirituality, and consequently that manifests in my art. So mm-hmm. I actually have a very scientific mind, and I think if my exposure up until this point in my life had been different, I could have been a very different person. I thought about going to school to be a scientist, actually, at one point. I think in that sense, I'm a spiritual anarchist. So that's where you draw in the punk rock and the,
right.
you know, the mysticism. So in my experience, any state of absolute intention and awareness can be a form of meditation.
Yeah.
So poetry, reading or writing it, is that meditation for me.
Right.
And I guess it can be a religion too, but to me that's too exclusive.
Right, right. You know, I once heard Alice Walker say that I guess a student had asked her one time, you know, they said, you must read a lot, or, you know, you must consume a lot of sort of literature and art and things for, you know, to get all these ideas, you know, so that you can write these stories. And she said, actually, I do the opposite. I spend most of my time clearing out my mind so that yeah, I can see when yeah. that great story comes along, you know. And so mm-hmm. that sounds yeah. right.
Let's talk about the essay you published and How to Survive in the Age of Amazon, which ended up
yeah.
really kind of going viral, went on the Huffington Post and got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that essay and what it means to the poet that is trying to publish in today's incredibly saturated market?
Yeah, I guess I'm lucky that my book's available on Amazon after writing that.
Well, it's a consortium distribution, and that's one of the best, that's for
right.
sure.
So, yeah, I mean, the gist of that essay, I was actually, for those who are unfamiliar with it, the angle that I was taking with it was that for independent bookstores, the idea of competing with Amazon on their turf is a losing proposition, that there's no way they're going to try to beat Amazon's prices or beat Amazon's selection or deliver as quickly as Amazon will deliver. But that's playing they're both by how Amazon sets them. And the, what I was positing was that if bookstores cater to what readers of poetry care about, I think they are de facto catering to the type of people who care about bookstores and who care about supporting bookstores. Mm-hmm. And what I was really interested in was this idea of this third place that the bookstore offers that is not just a place of commerce, but it's a social environment.
Right.
And, you know, that by having author events, by really having a great staff picks, by anticipating their customers' needs in a way, and not just like by price, but the bookstores that I love the best are the bookstores that I can walk into not knowing what I want, and they show me what I want. That's why we go to bookstores, right?
Right.
I mean, if you know what you want, you go on to Amazon, and in 24 hours, it's on your doorstep. If you want to spend the afternoon browsing and really having that kind of sensual and social experience, you go to a bookstore.
Right.
So that was kind of what the gist of the article was about. But, you know, that said, Amazon can also be a great tool for authors. You talked about being on Consortium. One of the first things Consortium required me to do through Third Man was to set up my Amazon author page, and I grudgingly did it. You know?
Right.
So I think that what's important to keep in mind is that it is a market, or it's a facet of the market, just like anything else is. It's a tool, just like anything else is.
Right.
And what's important, though, is to cultivate the other facets and not let it become the only avenue. Because, you know, a lot of people don't realize Amazon runs at a loss often, and they're doing this intentionally over and over again so that they can own the market. And I'm scared to think of what would happen once all the competition's gone, and then your only option is Amazon, right?
Right.
Because then they can do whatever they want. So that was sort of the point of the article.
Right, right. Well, it's good to know that your book might very well be delivered to somebody's door by a drone.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know, and that's the other thing I love about working with Third Man is Third Man has this sort of kinship with my own press, Black Ocean. And that we really believe in reaching out to our customers directly. You know, of course, we're going to still sell books through Amazon, and we're still going to use a distributor and all those other things. But Third Man Records is, like, practically single-handedly responsible for the revival of vinyl. You know, we saw vinyl sales are through the roof this year, and it's, like, it is the fastest-growing segment of the record industry. And Third Man Books is taking that same sort of approach to their books as they are to music. It's like, let's, which is also what Black Ocean does, is let's create objects that are beautiful, that people want to hold, that enhance the experience beyond whatever the content is. And they do things, they have their rolling record store, which is like a tricked out ice cream truck that sells music, which is also now selling my book, which is really cool.
Drones and an ice cream truck. My God.
Yeah, exactly.
Where does the ice cream truck deliver to? I'm just curious.
This is amazing. It travels all over the country.
Oh, nice.
It's this bright yellow truck that goes from like state to state, city to city, and just pulls up, and they have like a laminated menu of all the things that they sell, yeah.
And blasting out punk music, I suppose?
Yeah, or something.
We are speaking with poet Janneke Stuckey about his new collection of poems, The Truth Is We Are Perfect, out with Third Man Books. Janneke, would you mind sharing some poems with us?
Sure. I'll do two. The first poem I'm going to read is, I think, going up on Poetry Society of America. So if anyone is interested, I the poem's in print up on their website, and then I talk at length about the genesis of the poem. So I'll just read the poem for you, and then your listeners can speak it out if they like to. And this poem is the epigraph for the book, so it opens the book.
Okay.
Belonging not to winter but to another, I face the face that made me and lie all my hours upon your reckless hands. Make myself a prisoner of the sky, the sweet vermouth of your teeth, shaping me like a specter in the attic of my flowering heart. I hear the parade of mouths beating upon my sleeping head. I hear the thieves rising with their fingers full of moon. I hear the ocean I gave you waving back against the black uniform of the earth, and the saint children marching like blood. I hear your memories of me waken and glisten and rise in the hollow of my muscled dread, treading through the unlatched snow. Here they come. Here they come. Here come my betrayers.
I'm glad you read that one. It really shows how you respect your white space. That this was, this was a poem mostly that was in couplets, and you really do pause and let that silence be part of the poem. That's fantastic. Are you going to do another one?
Yeah, I'd be happy to if you have time.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the other poem I'll read, this is a few pages into the book. It's in the first section. It's called "The Art of Loss is a Lost Art." Mm. And this is the poem that the book takes its title from. There's a line in the poem. Because I love a burning thing, I made my heart a field of fire. In this way, I own nothing, can lose nothing. The mooncake you fed me remains a ghost upon my tongue. Immortal wasp, tiny white flame I have never touched. The truth is, we are perfect. Hours unspent like diamonds in the invisible now. Without each other, still, we are perfect. I make with my mouth the hour of your arrival, again and again in my indefinite sleep.
That was Janaka Stuckey reading from his new book of poems, The Truth Is We Are Perfect. Janaka, thank you for joining us
on
Words on a Wire.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'd like to thank our guest, Janaka Stuckey, which is still fun to say, for joining us on Words on a Wire and for sharing his poem with us. Pick up the book, The Truth Is We Are Perfect.
Out by Third Man Books. So yeah, definitely pick that up. This wraps it up for this edition of Words on a Wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
And don't forget,
the next book you read
may save your life.